Bar.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That Podcast, show number 81.
Oh.
Hi.
Hi, I haven't seen you in a long time.
It's the post-Christmas show.
It's the post-New Year show. It's almost the post-Valentine's Day show.
It's the pre-Super Bowl show.
That's right.
But by the time it comes out, it'll be the post-Super Bowl show.
That's right. It's been a long time.
So it's been a while. We have a lot going on in the country and a lot going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just a lot going on in general, right?
I was thinking what's happened since we did our last podcast.
Not much. Not much going on.
These are the things that just came off the top of my head. There was a Christmas Day bomber.
Yeah.
There was a giant-ass earthquake in Haiti, which it's going to be forever until that's prepared. There's been Snowmageddon happening right now as we speak, right? The Olympics are starting in 6 days.
Yeah.
Scott Brown, the Playboy centerfold, won Ted Kennedy's seat in Massachusetts.
That's pretty funny.
That is. Let's see. Healthcare stalled. Michael Jackson's doctor is going to be charged. There's finally some resolution. And Toyota's having a few problems. And the Golden Globes, SAGs, Grammys have all happened. And the nominees for Oscars are out. I mean,
you just summed it up.
A lot going on, man.
And that's the show for today.
A lot happening. Yeah, we've been amiss. I've got to say. Sorry.
Well, you just did the show. You just did the show.
Sorry, listeners. I was just trying to think. When was the last time we talked? Because I will get rid of my article that I was going to tell everybody about rented Christmas trees. That was the fad for Christmas this year in certain regions.
Really?
Yeah, you rent a live tree and then they come and take it back. And they hold it for you until next year. I think that's really good. You don't cop it down. You don't throw it away. If you want to buy it and plant it, you're welcome to do that.
So you rent it, but it's actually out on a property.
Rent a tree. No, it's in a tub, and they bring it in a
But
in
will
a tub.
It last for more than a year?
Sure.
Oh.
Well, they're going to take it back, and they're going to put it out on a farm.
Oh.
And then they'll bring it back and deliver it right to your house.
Seems like it'd be pretty traumatic for the tree to be put into earth and then back up.
Oh, no. It stays in its tub.
Oh.
Because they grow really slowly. So
it can live
growing
in its tub.
It's growing in its tub, yeah. It's not moving in and out, no.
Oh, interesting.
It's staying in its tub. Yep. I thought that was pretty clever. That was happening in L.A. and Oregon and other places like that. But since Christmas has passed, save that idea for next year.
Okay, we got to cue that for next year.
Okay.
So this is just a something to look forward to for all you listeners.
That's a looking forward to.
Our Christmas show will talk about rented trees. And I'll probably ask the same question then.
Isn't it traumatic?
Isn't it traumatic for them? So, in fact, maybe we can just play this. Hey, one of the reasons we didn't have a show is because I didn't feel we had trouble with the website, you know? We've had trouble for the last, really, since last summer. And I don't know what happened. Google flagged it as carrying viruses. Finally, I ended up fixing it by just getting rid of everything and starting all from brand new. So, but that's up. It's up and good. ThisAndThatPodcast.com. Our phone number is 206-333-1003. Keep it clean, and we'll play it on the air, probably. If it's interesting, and we like it. Actually, there's very, very few calls that we reject. Only the ones that call us jerks, which, you know, I get about 5 of those a week.
All right, jerk. Hey, buddy.
Right. So the big event tomorrow, by the time this podcast comes out, the Super Bowl will be done.
Okay,
so what is your Super Bowl prediction? I know you're such an avid football fan.
I'm just going for the Saints. And I did bet $50.
Which
I do have a story about that.
What's that?
Guess how much money changes hands in Vegas tomorrow.
I don't know. Probably a great deal. Is it one of the biggest betting events of all?
It is the, yeah.
Okay.
It is $90 million are going to exchange hands in Nevada tomorrow.
Is that right?
It's the largest one-day sporting betting event of the year. Last year, $85 million went out the door. And if a casino gets it wrong, it costs them millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Well, the latest line, I think, is the Colts and 4.5. So did you get 4.5 points?
I see here Colts at 5 is what this article said, but that's okay.
It's changed all week.
Right. It's been changing all week, possibly because they want to make sure that they're hedged their bets.
Well, right. And the odds also have to do with how many people actually bet. Besides. So.
Mm-hmm. And it happens to be Las Vegas's version of Mardi Gras. because that is their idea. It is the only state that permits all forms of sports betting. So gamblers go there and they make it a giant party. So they're trying to sell. I mean, they have sold all the premier venues, the, you know, Hugh Hefner's Sky Villa at the Palms, at all the parties.
I did get a rent on that. Yeah.
Oh, did you? Yes. Are you going to be there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were having your own little gig. But
with all
if
my,
you're going to the Palms.
With all my little bikini models.
With your playmates. Oh, all right.
Yeah. Jeff and the Playmates. doing the Las Vegas Super Bowl thing. No, you know what I was just amazed is that every Super Bowl has its, you know, controversies.
Right, and what's this one?
We got a couple of them. The first one is this Tim Tebow, very religious guy, quarterback for the Florida, I think he is. He has an ad out there that CBS is going to run.
Oh, right.
That
the anti-abortion?
Anti-abortion, yeah. He's going to talk about, we haven't seen the ad yet, but he's going to talk about his mom who, after getting sick, ignored doctor's recommendations to abort her fifth child, and her fifth child was Tim Tebow, the Heisman Trophy winner. So what's interesting about this is CBS is rumored to have worked closely with a Christian group called Focus on the Family for this ad. But the network rejected other things, including this gay
The two gay guys, yeah.
Did you see that ad? I actually did see that. And I have to admit, I found the ad a little bit distasteful, you know?
I didn't actually see the ad, but I heard of it.
I mean, I didn't like it. I'm not saying there shouldn't be an ad.
They're licking their chicken fingers and they're sharing nachos or something?
Yes, and then they share the finger lock and they start making out. It's a little over the top, I will have to admit that. But and I think CBS even said, well, you know, we don't have anything against mancrunch.com. I mean, we don't have anything per se against mancrunch.com, but we didn't like that ad. And,
but I thought their,
you know, maybe, I don't
I
know.
Thought their whole gig was they kept it apolitical. They're supposed to keep politics out of it. So how did the abortion thing get under the radar?
Right. I don't know. So
I guess that's not considered a political topic anymore.
That's right. That's right. The other controversy, and that this kind of, I shouldn't say it's funny because it's not, but is The Who is playing.
Yes.
And Peter Townshend has had a 2003 arrest for accessing child porn.
Yeah.
Now, he explains it as he comes from an abusive childhood, and he was writing a book.
He was researching a book, right?
Researching a book on it. Which, you know, that sounds like an excuse you would say if you were caught, right?
Right.
So, I don't know. But
I know a lot of old Who fans are really not happy they're performing because apparently Roger Daltrey's voice is shot. Pete Townsend is still a great guitar player.
Those are the only two originals.
Oh, the other.
Those are the only two.
Okay.
And what's funny about this is the Super Bowl has been trying to avoid controversy.
Right.
And because of that, they've been booking artists like Springsteen, Stain Tom
and,
Petty, Rolling Stones, Paul McCartney. It's all our generation stuff.
Right.
It's not any of the newer acts.
It's not any of the new folks.
Ever
since
Justin Timberlake
and
Janet Jackson.
Right.
You know, they avoid this stuff.
Yeah.
But I think
you're not going to see any hip hop out there, right?
But I think a Super Bowl with the Black Eyed Peas. Come on, one of the most entertaining and biggest bands out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty non-controversial. I mean, really.
Yeah.
So. But anyways, the average age of the two surviving members of The Who is 64.5.
I was going to say, I bet they're in their 60s. Well, the Rolling Stones were, too.
Yeah,
huh?
I know.
They did it.
And I didn't know that.
And,
so Daltrey's voice doesn't sound that good.
No. So my
and they're on for 12 minutes.
Really? Oh, my God. My really diehard Who fans are going to think that, this new generation is going to think they sound like this. Now, who knows? Maybe he'll pull it out, but, you know.
Well, I would think that if you can't perform, if you're a Roger Daltrey, you've had a great success all your life,
right,
and if you really know you sound like shit, that you wouldn't take the biggest TV venue ever and actually embarrass yourself.
You would think that he wouldn't do that either.
No,
so maybe
I wouldn't think so.
Maybe he's been nursing it. Maybe he's been doing whatever
maybe
to get it up to
par. Maybe he's got a voice coach that's really helping him work through some of the kinks. And maybe it's not the same voice anymore. You know what I mean? But maybe he's going to work through with what he has.
Maybe that's what the diehard fans are unhappy with, is that it was not going to sound like they remember it.
Right. Right.
That could be.
Well, hey, you know what? I don't blame The Who for that. I blame the Super Bowl organizers for putting an old beyond its prime. And I hate to say that because I really love The Who. And they contributed incredibly great to the whole rock and roll scene.
Mm-hmm.
And
I've seen them a couple times.
Powerhouse.
And they are amazing performers.
So it's not a diss to them. But, you know, it's not their time, in my opinion.
So the other thing about the Super Bowl, the ads you're talking about, they're $3 million, right, for 30 seconds?
Right.
Right? Not only is this the most watched sporting event in the country, but more importantly, it's one of the biggest cultural events because of the ads, because this is where most of the memorable ads come from. And so I was reading a story about what are the 10 most memorable Super Bowl ads. And if you just hear them talked about, you go, oh, I can visualize that. Was I can up. Remember that.
And then the Ruzz Up comes to mind.
I can remember that. Well, the one that everybody seems to remember is the 1984 Apple ad introducing the Mac, which is the 1984 Big Brother ad where the girl smashes the screen with a sledgehammer. And then they say on January 24th, the Mac is coming and it won't be anything like 1984, a reference to George Orwell's book. Another one they say is going down in record books would be the Budweiser 1995 Three Frogs Croaking in Unison ad. Remember Budweiser?
Which, you know, that was a fun ad.
That was fun. That was hilarious.
I really
between the talking dogs and the beautiful horses and the
but I got tired of the fact that they retread that same ad.
They did
for the next
they
five did. Years in different variations. I was like, okay, enough of these Budweiser. The one ad was great.
Right. And the Mean Joe Green Coca-Cola commercial. It didn't actually debut during the Super Bowl, but it did run.
Where
it was
the little boy.
He shares his towel. They share a Coke, and he gives the boy his towel.
Yeah, it's a very sweet ad.
Yeah, and that's just been that's just the epitome of one of Coke's best ever. Then there was one that I couldn't quite remember until I saw it again. Monster.com's ad for it pretty much launched them as the premier job hunting web resource in 2000. It's black and white of kids saying, when I grow up, I want to file all day. Or when I grow up, I want to be underappreciated.
I remember that.
They just said all these things about the drudgery of work.
Yes, I remember that. It was really funny,
actually. And then another one, 1976, Xerox's monks copying the Bible. And then at the end, the one monk says, after the monk hands him 500 copies that he's made on a Xerox machine, it's a miracle.
I remember that one. I don't really remember that one.
That was actually very cute. So these are all available on YouTube. You can go back and check out the most memorable Super Bowl ads.
I saw a little statistic on the radio just coming over here. Or not coming over here. Coming
over to your house, where?
Yeah.
Come into the studio. Jeff drove really far to get her.
Come into the studio this morning. And they were saying that 51% watched Super Bowl for the commercials, 49% for the football game.
But even
the guys reporting on that said, we're not really buying that. I mean, that seems a little bit extreme.
I think the people who aren't diehard fans of the teams probably want to be entertained during those 30-second spots hold our attention.
And let's face it,
there's water cooler talk the next day.
There's a lot of people that watch the Super Bowl that don't watch any football all year round.
That's because
they're at parties.
Because it's parties. Yeah. It's a big social event. Yeah. It is a cultural phenomenon, as they say.
Yeah.
Then to a couple of the other ones, they said, remember the McDonald's ads with Michael Jordan and Larry Bird shooting it out?
They were
playing horse.
Yeah,
1993.
Those were good.
Yeah. Then there was Michael J. Fox for Diet Pepsi in 1987. I didn't remember this, but a cute girl came to his door, asked for a Diet Pepsi, so he takes off out the window through the rain across the street, gets a Pepsi, runs back, and the music, everything about it is just so 80s. I mean, when you look at it, it's like it really captures the generation.
Oh, I'd have to go see that.
Yeah, it was
again.
A really good one.
But
yeah.
I do remember the ad. It was funny. And then he's all soaking wet.
Yeah, he's soaking wet and hands her one, and then another cute girl, her roommate, Danny, comes over and says, do you have another one? And he goes, yeah. And he does it all again. It was actually very cute. The most motivational one was probably in 2000 when Christopher Reeve actually stood up and walked through CGI. It was for Nuveen Investments, but it was really pretty remarkable in that it said someday great things would happen in the future, such as solving spinal cord injuries. And they had all this. Christopher Reeve walked up to the podium. It was actually very moving.
Oh, wow.
But nobody remembers it was for Nuveen Investments. They all remember it was a Christopher Reeve ad.
Right.
And there was one that I had never really seen, Reebok's Terry Tate, office linebacker, but it was actually very funny. It's this guy who tackles everybody in the office.
Oh, I think I remember that.
And you could see more online. Yeah.
Why was he tackling everybody in the office?
Oh, because they were doing things wrong. You know, they didn't put a cover page on an email or just stupid stuff about what happens in the office, right?
That's funny.
Yes. So all in all, it was actually a very fun list and a trip down memory lane. So
we'll
see tomorrow.
We'll see tomorrow what kind of fun stuff they have in store for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
It's such a weird, the Super Bowl is weird though to me because I'm so used to getting up and going to the bathroom and stuff during commercials that I just, you know, I have to, it takes me a while. It's like, oh yeah, wait a minute. The commercials are what we watch.
Well, I go to a sports bar where they play them in the bathroom so you don't miss anything.
I'm going to be co-hosting a Super Bowl party with the girlfriend. So I'm going to be probably busy flipping burgers and stuff. So, but I'll TiVo it here. So, you know, I can watch stuff. Yeah. So what about the Oscars coming up? They got 10 nominations now for each category. I think that's a little over the top.
No, just for the best picture, I think.
Oh, is it just?
Just best picture. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was thinking it was for all of them.
Yeah, no, I watched the little ceremony in the morning. And yeah, everybody else is just 5. But best picture was 10 because last year the one with Keith Ledger was left off. And that's it would have been number 6, the nominee. Okay. What was his? Batman?
Right,
yeah, Batman.
Right,
It was not nominated. And so people were saying they really needed to open that category up. However, there are still only 5 front runners and really 2 front runners, right?
What are the 2 front runners? Avatar
and The Hurt Locker, which is his ex-wife's picture.
So
it's going to be James Cameron versus his ex-wife, Catherine Bigelow.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So did you see either of those?
Oh, yeah. I saw Avatar, which I thought was beautifully done. Absolutely amazing.
So I saw Avatar last night.
Did you?
Yeah.
In your living room?
My living room?
Did you get some downrighted pirated copy of it?
No, I watched it at the movie theater.
Oh, yeah. What'd you think?
Yeah, you know, I liked it. It was a generally warm, heartsy kind of movie with great effects and beautiful, just
beautiful
colors and beautiful. Well done. I thought some of the story was just Hollywood hokey. I got to admit, I was expecting just a little bit more from that. But you know, it is a Hollywood movie. It's not an independent movie. But I liked it. I give it a thumbs
number
up.
One,
I don't know if it's the best film.
Number one world grossing of all time.
Seriously?
He beat Titanic. He beat his own record.
Oh, wow.
So, and there's going to be a sequel, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
I haven't seen The Hurt Locker, but I hear amazing things about it.
Yeah, I really would like to see that. And, you know, I heard an in-depth thing on NPR about it, and they said, you know, it's really not a war movie. It's really about a human movie about psychology of being at war and, you know, the bravery it kind of takes to, you know, to
do it
it follows a group that's I can't remember the term, but they're taking mines out, you know,
landmine
sweepers. Mm-hmm. So it's supposed to be a great movie, so I really would like to see that as well. Some of the other ones are The Blind Side, District 9. I saw both of those. And Education, which I really still want to see.
I saw that was very good. Not best movie of the year though.
And Inglourious Bastards,
didn't care for it, but it's Quentin Tarantino.
I thought that one was fun. Yeah, I mean, you got to be a guy and
Quentin. It's his genre. You have to like him. It's very him. Yeah, exactly.
And it just makes me laugh.
Expect scalped heads in the middle of it. It really threw me. It's like, oh my lord, they're scalping people's
but
heads.
But that ending.
Yeah,
I just laughed and laughed.
It's such a fantasy
ending, you know? Precious, which I never saw.
I haven't seen that. I know the story and I just can't bring myself to see that, although it looks like amazing performances.
Yeah, you know? Especially given these actor and actresses' backgrounds, which is basically nothing. A Serious Man, which I did see. Oh, that was good. And then Up.
Up and Up in the Air, too.
Oh, why isn't Up? Yeah, I'm sure right.
Up in the Air, for sure. That's the George Clooney one. The man who travels.
I must have deleted that one. Yes, Up in the Air.
Air and Up. I am surprised that Up was nominated. I mean, it was a wonderful film, but animated.
I never saw Up,
Oh, sweet film. Very, very sweet. Nice.
My only disappointment is that I don't think 10 was enough. I think they needed 15. And with more with the name Up in the title.
That's right.
Like Cheech and Chong's Up in Smoke. That would have been great possibility.
Maybe they went with 10 so that the Las Vegas oddsmakers could actually have more to distribute, right? If you've got 10 nominees as opposed to like 2 teams going up against each other, you've got 10 vying. I've actually have seen odds on them.
So what's the best odds right now?
District 9 has like a 4% chance of winning.
I liked it.
I thought it was really intense.
I don't think it'll win.
No, it's not going to win, but it was intense.
Not with all the James Cameron buzz.
Yeah, I think it's either James Cameron or Hurt Locker. I don't think it'll be Up in the Air. I just think it was a good movie, but not great.
Right. No, I thought Up in the Air was just a nice, small,
it was a nice,
gentle
story.
Little movie.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Of course, that's what I saw Tootsie was, and Tootsie ended up winning an Academy.
Yeah, it did.
In its day, and I just thought, and I thought I liked it, but I thought it was a nice little film. And that's all.
Yeah. So guess what else is going on today, which this will already be over by the time this comes out.
Yes.
But today in Nashville, we have our 600 teabaggers together for the first time doing the giant teabag convention.
What is a teabag convention?
The tea parties. I'm sorry. Tea party. Not the tea bags. Well, maybe they do have tea bags at the tea party,
right.
But they are having the big old tea party. These are the anti-government, anti-establishment grassroots folks who don't like pretty much anything the president does. They really object to big government. They want taxes reduced, government, the size of government. They really care about the deficit and passing the deficit on to another generation. And these include the birthers and the assorted faction who says, you know, that Obama's a socialist and kind of a bit of the crazies, but also the ones who are just socially conservative.
If you look back at Obama's first year, no historian, no person with any kind of brain would say there's a socialistic anything to what he's done. You know what I mean? So moderate, it's pathetic. But people just want to hate him. Yeah. And to be fair, hate the Republican presidents when they're in too. We just live in a country where there's too much hate just for the sake of hating, not even looking at the policies, just hating because he's on the other team.
Right.
I'm putting my little air quotes on the other air quote team. It's just crazy out there right now.
Well, tonight is their keynote speaker, and that would be Sarah Palin.
Oh, great.
Or Sarah Cuda, as they call her, which is a shortened form of her Sarah Barracuda nickname from her former high school basketball team in Alaska. So they are her, most of them really support her, and they have really strong ties to the Republican Party. Whether these grassroots groups, there's like 300 some of them,
right,
know that they have strong ties to the Republican Party, but they actually do. And she's speaking tonight. A lot of them are actually boycotting it because there's a $550 entry fee to go to this little convention. Sarah herself is getting $100,000 for the appearance, and the sum has led criticism that so activists say that runs counter to the coalition's image and could preclude people from attending. Well, it already has. However, Sarah assures everybody that she's not going to benefit financially from speaking and that any compensation is going to go right back to the cause, quote unquote, but nobody really knows what that means. So she's saying that the
her clothing and wardrobe.
Yeah, that's right. The Tea Party mentality is an organic effort, a ground-up action, a call to action. Process isn't perfect or pretty, but the message is loud and clear. We want a government worthy of the fine Americans that it serves. So then after she does that, she's coming here to stump for Governor Perry. And then she's going to go on the Tea Party Express 3 bus tour kicking off next month. And in April, she's going to be in Boston for another Tea Party. So she's just a busy little beaver, but we'll be hearing about her little speech tonight. And the other thing that's come out today, did you hear about Todd?
Todd, her husband,
and the thousands of emails that have been released by the state of Alaska under the Request for the Freedom of Information Act.
No.
It turns out Todd is actually like the shadow governor. He pretty much dictated what was going on in the whole state. Thousands and thousands of emails, and 300 Jeez. Of them were not released because they said they were executive privilege, and they included subject lines like budget cuts, appointments to the Agricultural Commission, the Oil Commission, the budget finalization process. He was involved, it appears, in every facet of the Alaskan government.
Well, that's going to hurt if she ever really... is a nominee in
his,
2 years.
His people are saying, oh, he's done nothing inappropriate. And
that
a spouse of any kind of politician is a trusted advisor.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. Instead of just riding his snowmobiles and fishing and doing oil like we think he's doing, it seems to me like he's running the state with her.
Yeah.
So, hey, they got two for the price of one, but not anymore.
Not anymore. Well, yeah, you know, I don't know what to think of that Tea Party thing. I mean, it's good to get grassroots support. It's good to get people interested, but
some of those people are
I think it's
crazy.
More about it just seems like it's more about hate. But maybe I'm just seeing how that's reported. Like, yeah, I think we all want responsible government. You know, I don't think it's hard to argue.
It's hard to say.
We don't want waste, you know.
Right.
We don't want inefficiency, and we don't want government just for the sake of government. I think everybody can kind of rally around that. But it always comes down to the question of intelligent debate about what things...
Yeah, what would you cut?
Right.
I actually heard a man say, interviewed this man, and they asked him, well, what would you cut? What do you advocate if you're saying smaller government?
What would you focus on making more efficient?
He said he'd get rid of Social Security and Medicare. It's like,
really?
I hope you take care of your grandparents, and then I hope you're prepared for catastrophic illness.
Yeah.
I hope you're prepared for...
That's where you roll your eyes and you say, you clearly are not a deep thinker. Because nobody
in their right mind can say, we're going to give up a complete program program like that. And then there's like 2 feet away from him, a group of elderly people standing there,
right.
also tea partiers.
Yeah.
And they're probably looking at him like, what the hell
that's
are you saying?
That's not what I'm here for.
I just want small government. And I want them to cut out unemployment benefits for people like you.
Yeah, exactly. But I love it. Everybody wants to cut everybody else's thing. It's just like Obama was saying in the State of the Union and in his follow-up speech to the Republican, the Republicans, basically saying, you know, everybody's project is wasteful, but your projects somehow never are
right.
in your district, you know?
Right.
And it's the same way.
Everybody
wants to cut taxes,
right.
but nothing that's going to affect them.
No, exactly.
So, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, this anger just gets us nowhere. It's like,
right.
sit down and make compromises and, you know, make sacrifices in some cases, because there is sense to have lower taxes. I mean, we all get that. Nobody wants to pay taxes for stupid things. But I also don't want to give up my trash pickup.
Right.
I don't want to give up highways. I mean, there are some things I think that we all agree that are probably pretty good things.
There's an amazing, speaking of taxes right now, if you go to USA Today under their news section, there is a link that is called Tracking Taxes, and you type in the amount of money you make,
yep.
and it shows you exactly, it breaks down
where
your money goes in the federal budget. It tells you exactly how all your taxes are spent. And
right.
I thought it was absolutely fascinating, and I recommend everybody go and check it out. I typed in a flat number. I typed in 100,000 just for the
right.
hell of it, because I thought that was an actually interesting number
right.
to divide. The tax rate is $26,700. This is for a taxpayer who files individually, uses a standard form, doesn't itemize, and has one exemption. So
okay.
this is what they used. But this tracker is amazing. It tracks taxes from 1940 to 2010. Right now, this is a 27% tax rate. And guess what the number one expenditure is? We've definitely talked about
defense.
It before. Defense. So $6,692 of that approximately $27,000 goes to defense, which is about $500 a month when you think about it.
Yeah, wow.
So can you imagine what you just done this month? If you make $100,000, you've spent $500 basically defending our
yeah.
country.
Yeah.
That's where your money went. And then $6,200 goes to Social Security. So
mm-hmm.
those are that's our retirement. That's our parents, our
mm-hmm.
grandparents, you know. Then $3,465 to health. $3,100 to other, and other is defined as veterans, commerce and housing credits, transportation, community and regional developments, general government administration, and justice. Then $2,800 to interest. There's the interest on the debt.
Right.
So $2,800, $1,450 to Medicare, $600 to natural resources in the environment, $470 to international affairs. I imagine that's the State Department and everything it takes for embassies worldwide.
Right.
$300 for general sciences, space and technology, and $240 for agriculture.
Hmm.
I thought that was absolutely fascinating. About that is exactly where your taxes go.
Puts it, makes it real.
Makes it really real. It's like, okay, well, I get that. And so when you look at that,
we should really, really scrutinize the way our defense money is spent.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that the ratio is off, because we all want to defend the country, but, you know, do we really want to be in Iraq?
I know, exactly.
For example,
right.
I mean,
right.
you know, how much money is spent.
And what
there?
Of those things would you want to cut? I mean, they're all important to somebody, you know?
I know. So, right.
It is amazing. So I thought that was really fascinating. It's on USA Today, Tracking Taxes.
Well, that's very interesting
mm-hmm.
to know.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Well, did you see Obama's speech?
I did.
And did you see the follow-up little thing to the Republican?
No, I walked out of
good.
The room.
It was really good.
He was preaching to like 100 people in his state legislature or
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's their up-and-comer, I hear. He's been in office, what, a month? The governor of Virginia, right? Isn't that his book?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's the up-and-comer of the Republican Party.
No, I didn't. Oh, no, I didn't watch that speech.
Oh.
No, I didn't watch that.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Republican
yeah,
response.
Yeah, no, I think those responses are goofy. I never watch them. The Obama 2 days afterwards talked to the Republicans.
He went to their little get together and
right.
took fielded questions.
Yeah,
they had a little.
And he was very good. In fact, even one of the conservative commentators on NPR's Left, Right, and Center said, I thought Obama was really good in that, and he was just pointing to, you know, very obvious things. But at the end of the day, he said, you know, if we're gridlocked, I thought this was interesting. If you, you know, a lot of you have painted me as being, you know, this big Bolshevik, and healthcare being a Bolshevik plan. He goes, you know, 30 years ago, healthcare like this was proposed and it was considered very conservative. I mean, you know, but if you paint me this way, which you have been, which I'm not, clearly, then it makes it very difficult for you to ever join me in legislation, because then you've already painted this picture as Obama the socialist.
Right.
So then if you actually join me in some legislation, it'll make it that much harder for you to get reelected, mm-hmm. because it'll be like, well, you like socialism.
Right.
I thought that made a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you're kind of screwing yourself. Not only are you kind of screwing yourself, but you're making it impossible for us to do actually anything. Any of the people's business.
That's right. And that's what now, everybody's
whether anybody will listen to that, who knows? You know, it's so much of a game anymore, it seems like. And I think part of it is because
the dumb
people in the world, mm-hmm. listen to these pundits and mm-hmm. just don't use their head to think about reasoned policy. They just want to hate.
Right.
And people want to get reelected, so they listen right. to that hate.
They say it's like every day is an election day up yeah. there, and everything they say is taken as a soundbite, taken out of context. There's an apology every right. other day now, right, for something somebody said like 8 weeks ago or something.
Right.
Like, what's the thing with Rahm Emanuel and Harry Reid? It's like, oh my lord, stop apologizing.
I don't even keep up with that minutia anymore. It just bores me.
It is there's too much news coverage. That is part of the problem. You know, yeah. it's like there's news coverage everywhere, so you have to keep it filled. So,
right.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And Obama said, I think he was, one of the Republicans was asking him some budget questions, and Obama said, you know, the problem is the news media, like, if I say Joe Blow, Republican, is a, you know, reasonable, smart guy, mm-hmm. and I like working with him.
Mm-hmm.
He said, nobody will publish that, even though that's the reality.
Uh-huh.
And right. he goes, and then he kind of smiles and goes, I'm sorry if I just hurt you. Replay that bit
That's
in the campaign,
funny.
You know.
That's good.
But it was funny.
That's
he was good. He was rocking and rolling. Mm-hmm. He must have had his Wheaties that morning. He did good. Anyway, hey, do you know what the drunkenest cities in America are?
The drunkenest cities.
Yes.
Oh, let me think. Where was
this?
That
is
be?
Rated by, just to give you an idea where it comes from. It comes from Men's Health.
Uh-huh.
And they drew up a list of data from death rates from alcoholic liver disease, booze fueled car crashes, frequency of binge drinking in the past month, number of DUI arrests, and severity of DUI penalties. That's how they came up with it.
I would think it would be somewhere where the availability of alcohol is great. I'm going to say, let me go with Los Angeles.
No.
No?
The drunkenest city is Fresno, California. I don't know why.
Because there's nothing to do there.
Yeah. Reno, Nevada is number
second. I was trying to think down and dirty. Yeah.
Billings, Montana, Riverside, California, which Riverside is
close.
Just an LA
suburb. Yeah, that's
LA.
That's in LA.
But then here's the fifth one, Austin, Texas. How about that?
Wow.
And I know there's a lot of kids there, but still. I mean, there's a lot of college towns that aren't in here.
Right.
St. Louis, Missouri, San Antonio, Texas, Lubbock, Tucson, Bakersfield, California. The least drunk, so I don't know what the common element there is, but the least drunk is Boston, Massachusetts, and then Yonkers, New York, then Rochester, New York, then Salt Lake City. That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Miami, Florida, least drunk.
Wow. How about New Orleans?
I think of it as a party town.
Yeah, because I was going to say Miami or New Orleans.
New Orleans isn't on this list.
Wow.
Yeah,
because that's pretty obnoxious parts of New Orleans.
Well, people go to New Orleans to get their party on.
Yeah, they go there to party. Yeah,
right.
So you'd think they would be. So maybe they're saying, you know, the local people.
Right.
Maybe everybody there walks to the hotel and they don't cause car crashes
right.
and they leave and
right.
they take their alcoholism away.
Right. Hmm. Well, another funny thing I saw recently, did you see the YouTube where this guy from, I think it's Macquarie Bank in Australia, a columnist was doing some, you know, financial talk and they had the office in the background and this guy right in back of him was pulling up topless nude models.
Well,
and at one point his buddy, but you can see it on the YouTube, it's so funny.
Yeah,
and at
laughing.
One point the buddy goes, nudges him and says, you know, they can see you, and he looks right at the camera and then he puts it back onto his spreadsheet. So I kind of was curious, like, what happened to him? And the Macquarie group said the employee will stay at the bank. They put him on some sort of, you know, probation kind of thing, but he'll stay. So
wow.
How embarrassing would that be?
That's great. So you've taken any trips lately?
No, I haven't, actually. Going down to Galveston with a few people in a month or so. Yeah. But I was going to go, you know, for Rock Island, Illinois, my hometown, for Christmas, but my girlfriend and I were both just sick. We were too sick to go, and the weather sucked, and blah, 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 you know, so... Yeah. How about you?
Well,
you've been doing a lot of traveling.
I have been traveling a lot, but I was in LA 2 weekends ago, and they were about to start. this was news all over LA. They were about to start a tour into South Central for tourists called In the Ghetto.
Really? Oh my gosh.
So I found new information about the tours where you can actually go and see where the biggest gang warfare in Los Angeles and very poverty-ridden area is.
Right.
It's led by a former gang member. You sign waivers that you're not going to, you know that this is somewhat dangerous. You go in an air-conditioned coach, and then reformed gang members sometimes come along, and they recall their lives on the streets, and all proceeds go towards helping gang members find jobs.
That sounds like exploitation until you said the last thing.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. You get to see the L.A. County Jail, which is the site of one of the largest gun battles in American history.
Really?
Yeah, you get to see the birthplace of the Black Panther Party, and you get to see a graffiti lab. So that's what you get for $65 a person.
Wow.
And so there were some other, in this article, they also said there were some other things in other cities that are pretty bizarre. You can actually, in Mexico, you can do a run for the border tour where you actually pretend you're an illegal immigrant and you try to cross the border and people shoot at you with laser guns.
Jeez.
In Paris, you can do a tour of the sewers. In Edinburgh,
that would be neat.
UK, you can go under a bridge that's known for a high volume of ghost activity, paranormal activity. And so you walk underneath and they give you a electromagnetic field recorder. You can do that.
Nice.
This is the one that was pretty controversial after Slumdog Millionaire won the 8 Oscars. You can now tour the slums, especially in Mumbai. You can actually tour that slum. It's called Poverty Tourism. Over 1 million people live in a 555-acre area. And whether you think it's exploitative or educational is up to you. 80% of the profits go to help the poor. And there's similar tours in Jakarta, Indonesia, and Kenya. Also in Hollywood, you could do the dead celebrity tour, where you go and see famous places where, you know, people died.
Right.
Or infamous things happened, like the George Michael bathroom incident.
Right.
Or in, this one was pretty funny, in Colorado City, Arizona, you can do the Three Wives for a Day tour, where you get to learn about polygamy.
Really?
By a secluded polygamist colony member will teach you all about why they wear prairie dresses and long braids.
Wow. I didn't know polygamists did that.
I know. And then the scandal sightseeing tour in Washington, D.C. is very popular. You get to see all the famous scandals, such as the Watergate and K Street.
Sure.
There you go. So those are some of the tours, but I do remember when I was in L.A. and they're talking all about the new ghetto tour.
I guess all those tours kind of make sense. You did miss the ghetto
tour. I missed the ghetto tour, yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did you see the Big Apple news? You got
what?
iPad coming out.
Oh, Apple. I thought you meant the Big Apple, meaning New York.
No.
Like, no. Oh, yes. No. So what's your take on the iPad there, Mr. Technology? Did you buy one yet?
Well, they're not out till April.
Oh, okay.
The pricing...
Are you on the list?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
The pricing is $499 for the basic 16 gigabyte with Wi-Fi. But if the basic 16 gigabyte with plus 3G is $629. But here is the deal. What is it? You have to buy, you know, a 3G data package from AT&T to make it work with 3G. And I wrote that down.
It's expensive, right?
I wrote that down, but I must have lost it. Anyways, I can't remember what it was now. But, you know, like I've got an iPhone, and now I've got UVerse coming into the house for data. So really, I'm going to pay three different data plans for the same really thing, kind of. I think this is going to got to change. I don't know. I mean, there's no compelling reason for me to get it.
Who did they aim it at?
Well, I just pulled one article, and it said, this may be, first of all, the New York Times writer, David Pogue, he said, you know, I know there's going to be a lot of people dissing this. There are already people dissing it. Like, what does it do that if the phone or the laptop won't do?
Right.
And he goes, but... You know, until you see it, until you start to see what kind of applications are created, you know, this is, it could be something or it could be nothing. We just don't know.
Right.
I heard on a radio coming this NPR article again yesterday that they're saying, you know, maybe get the $500 price point is a little bit expensive. But you can imagine where you're in your house, where you have two or three of these things laying around in different rooms, just to, you know, pick up and look up a recipe or something. So you can imagine that. I mean, it's a nice viewer. You can look at photos. You can read a book. So it's kind of a matter of the price a little bit. But you can see how handy this device could be. One of the things that this wasn't from Apple, but this is from some pundits. They're saying what. The most immediate people that might buy this, it's not going to be like the iPhone where young kids are lining up in Apple to get it. It's just a little bit too expensive and not as useful.
Right.
What they said, and I have my suspicions of this, but what they said is that this is people in that are busy corporate people, busy travelers, have always been looking to do as much as possible on their phone versus their laptop, so they can just not lug the laptop. So this maybe their solution. Now, you know, because Apple is creating a very cheap version of their, you know, their Microsoft Word, their Works with the spreadsheet, with the presentation and the word processing. So it could be great. My problem with that is I've never worked anywhere really used those.
Right.
It's always been the Microsoft Office suite. So I don't know. But that, you know, even if this isn't the exact thing, the question begs, where does the tablet computer sort of
where does it fall in?
Here?
That's what I heard. I heard two people say that too.
Is
that it's too big to put in a pocket, too heavy.
Right.
So so essentially you're carrying something anyhow. So what's the point?
Right.
Why wouldn't you carry
If it could replace a laptop, though, it is smaller and lighter and easier to use. You got the touchscreen versus non.
Right.
So it definitely has got some potential. It could potentially, you can use it as a book reader, you know, like my Kindle. But it's yet to be seen. So no, I don't have any need to get one. And the fact that I would have to buy another 3G package, that just seems really goofy. So all that stuff has to be shaken out as the competition comes in. And you know, I hope there's early adapters so that this idea of a tablet computer that may end up reaching a price point of $200 to $300 eventually, you know, gets fulfilled. Because I think it does sound like it's got a neat, you can watch TV on it. It's much better than watching on your smartphone. And you can bring it with you. It doesn't fit in a pocket, though. But it is definitely easier than bringing a laptop. So, I don't know. We'll see. But it's not obvious. You know, that I'm going to get one.
Right. Like an iPhone where you were sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no questions about it.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? What do you think?
How do you like your Kindle?
I like it.
I'm more interested in Kindle,
yeah,
I think.
I like it. Yeah. I think, you know.
You don't miss holding a book?
No, I don't. I don't care. But the Kindle is, the battery life is the thing that worries me about the iPad with reading a books, because the Kindle battery just lasts forever, because it's just the technology is such that it doesn't use any battery when it's actually displaying.
Oh, wow.
You know, there's no backlight. So you have to, like a book, you have to have a light around
it.
Oh,
okay.
And of course, it uses a technology that's supposedly like liquid paper, you know, that's easier on the eyes than, say, a computer screen, which is what the iPad would be. Not that the iPad won't be a nice reading device, but I think over the long run, it may be a little bit harder than something like the Kindle. But, you know, tomorrow's iPad will be a Kindle, too. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's,
you know. So is Apple starting their own service to download books?
Yeah,
they're going to compete. Yes, they are, right?
I think they're going to compete.
Yeah, I think they are, too. And Google is, too.
Let's face it, it's going to be hard to compete with Amazon for that. I mean,
you think they sort of know what they're doing in that environment, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, the Kindle right now has a web browser on it. It's not a very good one. It's clunky. It's kind of crappy. But, you know, that'll evolve as well. But, so you think about getting the Kindle,
I'm thinking about a Kindle,
especially for those that travel a lot.
Yeah,
I mean, I really don't use it as much as I you know, would. But
I still like holding books. I like books. Yeah. No, I grew up with books. I love books. And
I just bought 2 new bookcases to put my books. I like books. I like the way they look. You
I
know?
Like books. So it's going to be, but, you know,
but there's
just
a convenience factor when you can schlep a bunch of magazines and books in one little thing on your trip.
Right. I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just think 2 generations from now, they probably won't have books.
Right.
You know, there won't be books in schools, right? There won't be, maybe libraries will look completely different.
No, because textbooks are already getting on board with the larger Kindle and this iPad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it'll be, within our lifetime, it'll be very different, you know, that people probably won't carry books, you know?
Right.
So.
Right.
Interesting.
I know.
Well, there's some articles about people around the world that I thought were really kind of interesting. Did you see Invictus?
No, I haven't
seen
it.
No, I wanted to see it. I do want to see Invictus because this past week, I thought this was pretty amazing. Nelson Mandela invited his ex-wife and one of his former jailers to dinner to celebrate his 20th anniversary of release from prison.
Hmm.
Isn't that really pretty amazing? What a great story.
Yeah.
He was the, you know, the South Africa's first black president. He spent 27 years in prison under apartheid. In an infamous hard labor prison. He was released in February of 1990, and he won the Nobel Peace Prize along with F.W. de Klerk the same year. And then he was elected the first president of the country in an all-race elections. And Invictus tells the story of him hosting the 1995 Rugby World Cup to try to unite his country. So he had a private dinner party this week in his Johannesburg home with his former jailer, who he developed a friendship with, and he wrote about it in his memoir.
Wow.
And the jailer, the friendship reinforced his belief in the essential humanity of even those who had kept me behind bars. So he was a white prison warden. And then his ex-wife, Winnie Mandela, she went on to become really controversial because there's allegations of human rights abuses, and then she was supposedly unfaithful to him after he got released from prison. But so he said, "We're meeting to reminisce. When you look back, the way this country has become normal is unbelievable. There were all kinds of prophets of doom, but life has gone on, and we've done exceptionally well, even though there's still a lot to do." So that was one of his statements. And his daughter is filming it for a documentary. He's 91 now.
Wow.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's really good. So I would like to see Invictus. That was pretty.
Yeah, I'd like to see
that
too.
Pretty great story there. Pretty heartwarming.
Well, did you know 8 out of 10 drivers name their car? Do you have a name for yours?
No, I do not. No, what's the name for yours?
I don't have one.
You don't?
So we're 0 for 2. Yeah,
8 out of 10. Are these related to the drunk people?
Is
this
wonder.
Particularly high in Fresno?
I wonder. But if you do name your car, you tend to care for it more.
Really?
So women, 88% of women name their car, and they don't say the percentage for men, but it's a little bit smaller, which may explain why women get better insurance breaks and why they have less accidents and so forth.
Because they take better care of it.
Perhaps so. Who knows?
That's cute.
But I think that's very interesting. The car color has a lot to do with their name. Like if it's a yellow car, they tend to have banana in the name. Red cars are given nicknames associated with going fast, like Speedy.
Well, that's what I'll do. I'll go name mine Speedy.
Want to take a ride in Speedy?
It sounds so silly.
Silly. Men and women tend to name their cars according to the opposite sex. So 81% of men give their car a female name, and 91% of the women give their car a masculine name.
Really?
I really haven't known many people in my life. Oh, now I should say this was actually done in England, so it may not apply to U.S.
Different.
So maybe
okay.
It's different. Maybe it's a different culture. Because I don't really know. I mean, I've known some in the past, but not that many people that had a name for their car.
And especially of the opposite sex. I can't imagine naming my car a guy name and, like, talking to it. Like, hey, Craig, come on.
Hi, Craig.
Or hey, buddy. Or hey, big guy.
Look at me, not starting, big guy.
Come on, I just can't imagine. Taking it into the dealer. Hey, big guy's here.
Hey, did you work on Rufus here?
Really?
Yeah, it just seems really silly to me, too.
I know, that is kind of funny.
So I decided to, Gretchen saw in the house here, I'm rearranging lots of stuff, getting some new stuff, and I had to...
And you have a macaroni and cheese recipe, right?
Oh, yeah.
You want to talk about that?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so for Thanksgiving, I made this mac and cheese. Was it Thanksgiving or Christmas? Christmas, I guess it was. I made this mac and cheese from a recipe that was recommended to me. I can't remember where I got it now. Anyways, This recipe had four different kinds of cheeses in it. Bacon grease, sour cream.
Oh my God, Jeff.
It had bundles and bundles of crap in it. And I made it and baked it, and it was probably the richest, heaviest thing. Yeah. It wasn't greatness, though. And the preparation was messy, and it took some time.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't greatness. So anyway, so for Super Bowl tomorrow, I'm making a recipe I found in allrecipes.com is the most popular mac and cheese recipe. It's only got two types of cheeses. Still has sour cream, but no bacon grease, nothing like that.
Where do you go to get bacon grease? You have to cook a ton of bacon?
I cook bacon, yeah. Yeah. Well, and bacon, too. You add the bacon to it. It was not very good. It was so heavy. It was unbelievable. So anyways, I'm going to make I'll let everyone know how this mac and cheese. It looks pretty easy to prepare and just a little bit less...
I did that with gazpacho once. I went and tried to find the best gazpacho recipe, and there were like 10 gazillion gazpacho recipes.
Yes.
So after you go and get the tomatoes and peel them, and peeling tomatoes is oh so fun, and peel them and cook them, I put too much garlic in it. And after you put more garlic in, you can't take garlic out.
Right.
I didn't know that, but garlic, there's nothing to add
nothing
to garlic.
Neutralize.
Yeah, you can't neutralize it. You have to just triple the recipe, and if you have no pans bigger than the max pan you're at, you're not going to be tripling the recipe anytime soon.
I like garlic. Though, so I could probably if I overdid it.
I totally don't know my definition of a garlic clove.
What did you use for garlic? Did you use garlic cloves and crunch them up?
I used the big white thing instead of the clove, which is one part of the big white thing.
Right.
Yeah. Oops. So sometimes those recipes you find online.
Well, you know, all recipes, they have a rating system. So everybody rates them. So I got the top rated... mac and cheese.
All right, good for you.
So
what's going on in your house here? Yes, he is moving things around.
So I had to get an electric drop to move the TV because I didn't have a cable thing in that connection, and also an electrical outlet or a cable box. So I had to move the TV, and had to get Dish Network. That's who I use out there. So it was a perfect time to compare plans. I was thinking, okay, you know, I might move. I looked at all of the things that I'm paying for in the in voice data, and I was using DSL. I had a very low speed of like 1.5 megabytes max, the lowest tier of AT&T's DSL service. And I couldn't even upgrade with the DSL because I didn't have a server close enough to the house.
Well.
So, but I looked at all the plans, and I think consumers do this every couple of years anyways.
Right.
But I like Dish Network. I have had nothing but I like their DVR. I like their service. So no compelling reason to quit. And compared plans, I thought UVerse as a whole package would be a little bit better. And it really wasn't.
Hmm.
So I ended up getting the UVerse 2-pack, which is just the voice and the data. And it cost me a whopping $5 more per month. But now I have like 6 times the speed of my internet. And... landline, I have, it's digital, and I have unlimited long distance, which I really don't care about that much, but I guess it's nice to have, you know. But I kept Dish Network. Anyways, I just thought I'd give an update on that, and it's very interesting how closely priced and packaged all these competitors are. So if I didn't like Dish Network, I probably would have gone for the all for one, and eventually I would like to lose the Dish off the top of my house. So, but there's just no compelling reason to at this point.
Yeah, I sort of had the same thing. I was going to go with UVerse, but I just called the cable company and said, will you match their price? Because that's the only thing I don't have with AT&T now, and they did.
Yeah,
they'll do it.
That's the thing to do.
They'll
as well.
Do it, because I really didn't feel like ripping out wires and taking things back and all the stuff associated with it, and it was so hard to get it all installed. I just didn't feel like I wanted to go through that again.
Yeah.
So...
no, that's a pain. It's a pain. And even to get UVerse, they had to. They spent 4 hours at the house. They had to go through the attic and drop lines and, you know. So all that stuff is a pain. And the Dish Network guys almost couldn't even drop the cable. I had to get a second installer the next day who was more experienced to be able to do it because apparently there's some fire barrier in my walls.
Oh, geez. So, probably hence from the fire last year. That barrier is probably a good thing now.
Right. Well, that's the way they build these old houses. But the more experienced installer goes, this is not rocket science. You just drill a couple of holes. You have a flashlight in one hole. We do this. These guys just didn't know what they were doing.
Aw.
So.
Well, so you know where we're going to soon?
I don't know.
Where
are we going? We're going to infamy.
We're going to hear Greg Mortensen speak. He's here in Dallas today. And
Gretchen is treating me to great tickets.
Oh,
nice.
Well,
I cannot wait. And he's great.
I talked to my mother and she goes, "Who's that?" And so for those of you who say, "Who's that?"
Who dat?
Who dat? Oh, don't think we can say that without permission from the NFL.
Oh, dang it.
Okay, we're not saying who dat. Greg,
I'll delete that.
Greg is the author of Three Cups of Tea, which has been on the New York Times bestseller list for years now.
And I never read it. I'll
he's a
it.
Former mountaineer. He's now a humanitarian. He has built 91 schools in Pakistan and 39 schools in Afghanistan, primarily educating girls, which is pretty remarkable in these heavily Muslim countries where girls are not allowed, or up until very recently, not allowed to attend school.
Right.
So we're going to go hear him talk about this pretty amazing, it's more about building communities and partnerships and how do you go about doing something against all odds. 8 years, he tried very hard to build this one school and he had to convince the local mullah, who was the conservative village head, to permit one single girl to go to school. And now today, after 8 years, more than 300 girls are attending school. At school at this one particular location, and now they have the backing of him, but it took that long.
Wow.
It's such a long, drawn-out process. His book is actually required reading for any soldier going to Afghanistan, and he has actually briefed the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Why is that? Is that because he paints a pretty good picture of the culture?
Because he's done so much work with building partnerships. He spent 2 decades building trust and respect in conservative Muslim communities, and he just says that like the military has been really helpful. They come to him for guidance on improving relationships with tribal and village leaders. And he's just having such a good outcome. When the Taliban was in power in the year 2000, only 800,000 children in Afghanistan, that's out of a country of 33 million, went to school at all, and almost none of them were girls. Today, 8.5 million children go to school. Nearly 2 million of them are girls. So it just shows that the Afghans do want literacy, and they are willing to take their resources that they have. But I've also seen stories that the Taliban, you know, if the U.S. builds schools, the Taliban comes and burns them down after we build them because they're at war with us.
Right.
So it's really going to, I think, be interesting because he certainly knows about such a volatile region, and having spent so much time there, he almost died on K2, and he actually ended up in a little village who saved. He got lost on a glacier, and the village people, this very poor village in Corfe, took him in, and that's how this whole thing started. As a thank you for that, he promised a little girl that he would build a school, and he would come back and build a school. So they literally had to carry logs up a mountainside, log by log, in order to get the school built. Because he was pretty amazed that the children, 82 kids, would scratch their lessons in the dirt with sticks. That was their school. And they were so hungry to learn that, you know, can you imagine sitting outside in a mountainous region like Pakistan and with a stick? And that was, you know, trying to write the letters in the dirt.
Back in my day, all we had was dirt and a stick. And we liked it.
I know. It's so anyhow. So we're going to go hear him speak. And he's very, supposed to be very motivational. He's devoted his whole life to this now. He never has any desire to go back to K2. He says he's found a bigger mountain. So it should be very interesting.
Yeah, no,
so we're looking forward to it. And he's got a new book out, Stones into Schools, and so he talks about his journey after building the first ones, actually going into Afghanistan. He's had 2 death warrants issued on him. He's actually been kidnapped for 8 days.
Really?
He says it's very, very dangerous trying to build schools in refugee camps and in a war zone. So, you know, I can imagine. You know, we take schooling for granted. Like, we go to school and we're all safe.
We take our lousy school system for granted.
So much for granted, you know, what we have. So, so looking forward to it. But until next time, then.
Till next time we podcast, probably in October-ish, something like that.
well, everybody will know about the tree.
Yeah.
Ahead of time.
Wait till that next that Christmas issue.
Rent a tree.
Exactly.
All righty, bye.
So till then, bye.
Bye, everyone.